This is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Thank you, Dave, for this introduction, and welcome to the Christian War Room. We're going to look at a very interesting subject today, and what I want you to do is just imagine a frog and a pan of water, or a pot of water. I'm sure you've heard this proverb, you know, put a frog in boiling water and he'll jump out straight away, or in hot water. Obviously, it's a bit cruel to chuck him into boiling water. But when you put a frog in cold water and you gradually heat it up, he'll actually not jump out, but he'll stay in the water. Now, apparently, this is a myth. I was actually reading up on it. I sort of thought, right, let's check it out. And it's not right. A frog does actually jump out of the boiling water pan, even if it is only increased at a very low temperature rate. There were some very bizarre experiments which were conducted in the 1870s, and some very dubious scientists came up with this conclusion. Apparently, one scientist removed the brain of the frog, and he could then ascertain, you know, determine that the frog wasn't jumping out of the boiling water as he was gradually boiling it up. So it's some very, very strange stuff. But the proverb is used to sort of indicate whenever there is a gradual change, that people will not object, that they will not jump ship, that they will not leave. But if you introduce gradual change, if you introduce sudden change, so if suddenly changes come in at a rapid rate, that people get very uneasy and they abandon ship, they leave you and they try to get out. So that's really what this proverb is used for, and it's actually not true from what I could read up upon. Now, I want to look at some times, and even though the Bible says, you know, why were the old days, do not say, why were the old days better than these, for it is not wise to do so. And that's, you can find in, I think it's in Ecclesiastes or Proverbs, I think it's in Ecclesiastes, chapter 7, 8, around about there. Anyway, I want to go back, I want to do a little trip down memory lane and kind of contrast a period we've had some time ago and look at where we are today. And I think this boiling frog syndrome, or boiling waters frog syndrome, has kicked in an awful lot. We don't realize what's happening to our society, what's happening to our culture in the West, and how far we've drifted away from where we ought to be. And I think, you know, if I talk to a Christian that's my age, I'm 50, 51, if I talk to somebody my age, you will sympathize with this view that the things have changed dramatically, especially if you grew up in the West, and that some of the stuff we are looking at today is actually quite shocking. If you are young and you are a millennial, obviously you don't see what it was like before. So it's maybe harder, you know, what you accept as normality is in no means good, yeah, and acceptable. Again, when I look at my parents' generation as well, and I look at their generational gap, so when they were young and I was born around about that time, and the changes they've been through, and I look at my grandparents' generation, I'm not sure whether they were quite as radical as what they are today. Yeah, there were still certain values and certain sets of values which were maintained throughout this period. And to me, it's something which interests me, and I think it's appropriate for the Christian War Room. We need to recognize what is going on in our world, and we need to be able to point our finger to it and not try to make the Word of God fit the realities we find around us to make it less offensive, but rather let it be offensive, the Word of God, to a generation that has lost the plot, to a generation that can no longer differentiate between good and evil, where evil is good and good is evil. And we have got scriptures in, let me see, I think it's Jeremiah. We've got scriptures which warning us from this very thing, you know, woe unto those who say to good evil and to evil good, you know, who turn things around. And we need to, as Christians, we need to stand up for what is right and what is good, and we need to stand up against what is bad. And again, the line is sort of very blurry at the moment, and every sort of decade, from what I've seen, is getting more and more blurry. Okay, what made me tick that way? I have to say, you know, I'm a tickler for history. I love history. I love to see what, not just, you know, the history that and that date, this and this battle was going on, but I want to see what made people tick at certain times in the last 2,000 years and before. What made them tick, you know? What was life like for the ordinary person? You know, what were the concerns and the worries of ordinary people? That is sort of my thing about history. What was sort of the feeling of life, you know, in each generation? And when you sort of try to understand what is going on in each generation, there are two things which almost contradict, you know, in a way. And one thing which I find is that it doesn't really matter. You know, my grandparents' generation, my parents' generation, probably my great-great-parents, great-grandparents' generation, who I don't know, it was very similar. We all had the same ambitions, the same desires. We all did the same foolish things. We all had the same aspirations. Yeah. In a way, it was very, very similar. And then on the other side, it was very unique. There was a sense of the age, a feeling of the time. Maybe in German we've got this word Zeitgeist, a Zeitgeist which was there, which makes every age very, very unique and very special. And if I wish, you know, sometimes that I could live with all the generations since the days of Jesus and discuss with them what life was like. And maybe one day I'll be able to do so when I'm at home with the Lord, you know, by His grace and mercy. But obviously, no, I can't. All I can do is I can maybe look back about three generations, maybe look forward one or two generations. And so the whole spectrum I have is maybe stretching over and above possibly five generations or so. I don't know. But maybe round about there. That's the maximum we can see in our lifespan. And we can glean information from those people to do so. So I want to encourage you as well to do this if you've got the opportunity. So what sort of got me going on this was I was looking at a program. It's called Pop of the Tops. But I was looking at a couple of years. So I was looking at the year 79. 81, and I think it was, I wanted 82, and I wanted to look 83, which was the year where I gave my life to Christ, and where I was moving from a very secular, very godless lifestyle to becoming a Christian and really seeking the Lord, you know, to the best of my ability. And that was the year 83. I couldn't find anything on 83, and then I had to look for 84, which was a year later. And it was fascinating to see just the spirit of 4 years, how things have changed in the public domain, how people were dressing, how people were presenting themselves, the type of music, the stuff people were singing about, the cultural expression which was there within society, and sort of a transition from a fairly innocent view of people just wanting to have a bit of fun and not quite knowing how to do it. And within a period of about 4 or 5 years, to people who were sexualizing their presentation to a phenomenal degree and who were, you know, pretending some sort of strange new culture, pop culture, which became very, very famous. And again, at the time, I wasn't in Britain, I was in Germany, so... But what I can see is, looking back, is that it was very, very similar. Okay, so again, when I sort of take the time and I get sort of a little bit of a footprint from this era and I compare it to today, let me just make a couple of comparisons to see where we were then and where we are today. And I made some notes here, and let me just try and find them. So certain things were very, very different, and people very often can't relate to what life was like in the 80s. So just on the surface, you know, the media was very restricted. There were only maybe 3-4 media outlets. We had 3 TV channels and maybe about 4 or 5 radio channels, which was pretty much dictate to us what the culture is going to be. And everything was state-controlled as well, in Europe, that is. And so the media was in the hand of very few people, but it wasn't in the hand of commerce. It was in the hand of something the state had built up. And so they could, you know, put an emphasis on education, on maintaining morals and things like that. What else? So communication was very, very different. You had a landline phone, and it was quite expensive to talk on it, and that was all. So you didn't really have any, you know, like we have today, you know, the internet or mobile phones or anything like that. So all we had was just very limited communication. So you had to talk to people in person, which I think is quite a skill, which many youngsters today don't understand anymore. And I work as a lecturer or college professor, whatever you want to call it. And when I look at some of the kids I'm teaching, and most of them sort of are in their early 20s or late teens, and and when I sort of look at break time, they're just sitting around all over the place, and they're just staring at their phones and probably communicating with one another using their phones as well. There's very little face-to-face communication. Some classes I find is quite interesting. Some classes, they gel very well, and there's a lot of, you know, like camaraderie and things like that going on. Others, not at all. Yeah? They're completely isolated and sucked into their little handheld device. Anyway, in my years, when I was that age, that was unheard of. Yeah, that was just unheard of. You didn't have this. In a way, I think it was actually better because people learned to deal with one another on a face-to-face basis. And it's like people say, the vast majority of communication is not verbal, but it's nonverbal. It's through the expression on your face, the tone of your voice, the body posture, and things like that. Yeah. So you can then see what people mean by picking up on other signals as well, which you cannot do when you are very with a lot of difficulty when you rely on electronic communication. The media habits have changed as well over the time. Today, we've got thousands of TV channels. We've got the internet, you know, putting probably an infinite number of, I mean, obviously not infinite, but a huge number of channels which we can watch or entertainment we can plug into. Which we couldn't do in those days, you know. There weren't even video recorders or anything like that. They were just coming up sort of in the early 80s where you could start recording stuff. You had tape recorders. You could record audio, but you couldn't record video at the time. So you were very limited in what you could watch and what you did watch. A couple of other things as well, which I remember from these days, and I just want to go through this list and I want to sort of compare this to where we are today and then coming to a conclusion whether whatever's happening today is good or is bad. One of the things which struck me in the 80s, you never heard, or very rarely heard of natural catastrophes. You never heard about earthquakes in Europe. I mean, I'm sure they've taken place, but they just didn't make the news. And communication was good, but it wasn't that good that, you know, tons of images were distributed worldwide instantly. So you didn't hear that much about natural catastrophes. The use of psychopharmaca was unheard of. I don't know anybody in the 80s who used antidepressants. It may have been that there was, if they used them, that there was a sense of shame or something, or a sense of failure, but you just didn't hear about this. Murder rates were virtually unheard of. I didn't, you know, the stuff we've got today, like school shootings or, you know, people going on jihad and things like that, you just didn't hear it in the 80s. Didn't hear it. There was some stuff going on, and there were, you know, people who were a bit loopy, and there were people who were sexual predators and killed their prey after they'd done their stuff. But there weren't many of them around, and it didn't happen sort of all over the place. And again, I haven't got statistical data, and I thought maybe I should, for this talk, look at statistical data, but I just want to leave it to you. I'm convinced that the statistical data will show that in the 1980s, compared to the 2018, that all the rates were down. Murder rates were down, suicide rates were down, prison population was down, and so on. Divorce rates, divorce did happen and it did take place, and don't get me wrong, I totally agree that there's a situation where divorce is the only necessary, the only possible step to carry on living in peace, yeah, and where it is justified. But again, you didn't hear about it. Yeah. Very often people, if they had a conflict, they moved through and they moved past this conflict, and just losing a sense of love or a sense of, you know, joy, fun, thrill, whatever it is, in their marriage wouldn't make people go to the divorce lawyers or wouldn't get them to look for other partnerships. But, I mean, stuff happened, and there's no doubt about it, and people were unfaithful and things like that, so this happened. But when I look around my friends, there was one couple I know, one of my close friends, where the parents got divorced later on, not in the early 80s, but later on. And otherwise, I just know one other. And I knew a lot of people, but you just didn't see it that often. When I look around now, virtually a lot of people I know have gone through divorce. A lot of friends I had from school have gone through divorce. There's a lot of breakup. There are a lot of students I have. And when you sort of start talking to them, you see that that they're not living with their natural parents, but that they're living with one parent who is not natural to them, yeah, who is a step-parent. And very often it's not down to death of one of the parents, but it's down to divorce. But it's not uncommon. That's the point I'm making. It's almost uncommon to find a kid where both parents are still together, yeah, after they were married, and then obviously once I get to see the kids, it's 16 years, 17 years down the line after they got married or longer, and to see parents still together. It's very rare, actually. It's almost the exception, which is very concerning. Yeah. And again, in my age, when I was a kid, you didn't see this. This was the exception that parents were divorced. Today, it's the exception. It seems to be. That's totally subjective. I can't back it up with statistical data, and maybe it's not the point. And I'm sure if you are my age, you can relate to that. If you are younger, you can probably feel the pain having gone through the whole thing yourself. And so times certainly have changed. Whether it's for the good or for worse, I don't know. I doubt it is for the better. I think, you know, sticking it out and sticking with your spouse and working through difficult times is more rewarding than just taking the easy route of just walking away. I know, and again, I mentioned this point, sometimes, you know, when violence is involved, when people will threaten for their life, when things just don't work out anymore, divorce may be the better option, but certainly it shouldn't be the standard. Terrorist attacks were not unheard of. We had the Red Army faction, so it was communist terrorists, and it seems everything is split. It went from communism, and then suddenly we got religious terror attacks. I had a look at some statistics, and a lot of the news items, we don't hear them anymore because the terror attacks take place in Iraq, Afghanistan, but they're religiously motivated. And I think in 1 year there were about two or three almost every day where people died. Again, we become resilient to this. We become resilient to this, but they are taking place. So there were, I think, 1 year in excess of about 2,000 terror attacks where people died, and that was on a global scale. The happiness factor certainly has gone down. I remember the people in the 80s in general were friendlier, happier. In the late 80s, I went to Britain just as a visitor, and I got to know this nation a little bit from the outside, from somebody on the outside looking in. And it was a very pleasant nation. People were very welcoming, very friendly. In a way, it was quite amazing. And I think, having lived here for over 20 years, almost 30 years, that this aspect has slowly been lost. And that is no longer a happy nation. And there may be a lot of factors feeding into this. I think a lot of political decisions which weren't very wise, they fed into this as well. But also a cultural change that's taken place, without any doubt. People don't feel that happy, I think, anymore than what they used to a long time ago. Okay, so we are sort of looking at some of the things. Let's have a look at Christianity as well. When I talk about Christianity, I always talk about cultural Christianity and real Christianity. And there's a big difference. There are cultural Christianity, there are people who are religious, they embrace Christian values. Maybe they haven't surrendered their life fully to Jesus Christ. And it's not the driving force in their life. The driving force may be something else. It may be society. It may be a hobby. It may be their jobs, their family, whatever it is, but not necessarily God. But they still sort of are very positive towards Christian values, and they embrace them. and they pursue them to some extent, but it's not the driving force. Okay, so that's cultural Christianity, and then we've got real Christianity. So one thing I noticed in the 80s was that the churches were full, and pretty much everybody in the 70s and 80s, I knew, and that's just obviously very subjective, they had a certain respect for the church. They had a certain respect for God. And nobody really, not within my circle, would be a professed atheist. You know, would come around the corner and say, oh, this is all rubbish, I don't want to have anything to do with this. There were one or two. For example, we had something which is called a confirmation. So that was what happened in the Catholic and in the Protestant church. And when you sort of were about 12, 13, 14 years old, you were asked to, you know, confirm your baptism and make a decision. Make a decision that you would follow the teachings of the church. You know, that pretty much was it. And it was actually quite a good thing, because they made sure that you hooked up with somebody, some elmer. I think this is a communication or a technology term, but somebody who was a bit older, you know, who was loyal to the church, and you could talk about God and talk about everything. And with hindsight, it was actually quite positive. I mean, I'm not sure whether this the man we were talking to was a Christian, a born-again Christian. He certainly had a reverence and fear of God, and he understood a bit, but he tried to communicate whatever his faith was. Yeah, I don't know with hindsight. I haven't seen him since, and I wished I could actually see him at one stage. So by now he would be in his 70s, I guess, maybe older. But that was a positive thing. So he spent you know, a couple of months once a week. He went over there, and a bit like a Bible study, like a home group or something, where you looked at aspects of the faith, and then this would lead up to the confirmation. And I'm sure within the Protestant church something similar went off as well. I was within the Catholic church before. When I was 16, I left and became, you know, gave my life to Christ, and was looking, or became a member of a Bible believing church. Yeah, where only the authority of the Bible counted, not the authority of some institution or organization. Anyway, when you go to church now, and this was quite interesting. So in those days, where I lived, they had about three church services, and this is just which I would call a cultural Christianity expression of faith. So they had one on a Saturday night, they had one on a Sunday morning at 8, 8:30, then one at 9:30, 8 o'clock, 9:30, and one at 11 o'clock. And the Saturday night one was very full, because that meant people, because you had to go to church once a week, that was the rule. People could stay in and they could sleep on a Sunday. So they had one day where they could just relax and take it easy and didn't have to do anything, including going to church. So the Saturday night one was very full. Then the 8 o'clock one, there were quite a few people there, but it wasn't full. The 9:30 was teeming, because a lot of housewives, when they went home, they had to prepare the meal and they, you know, wanted to be ready and not have it too late. And then the 11 o'clock one was pretty full as well. So in an average church in my hometown, on a weekend, you probably had about 1,000 to 2,000 people going to church. And I think those figures are not exaggerated. They're quite realistic. Yes, maybe 500 to 1,000, maybe 1,000 to 2,000. I'm not quite sure how much it could contain. It's a long time ago when I was there. When you go today, is they only have like, they've got three, four churches together. They've got one church service between those churches, and there's not one every week in that church, and there's hardly anybody going. Yeah, and they've only got one, if at all, if they're lucky, they've got one service on a Sunday. And this is how the church has changed over the period of time. I sort of remember sort of going down Paderborn, where, you know, downtown, where my hometown is, and obviously now I'm just a visitor. And I was just going where the whole Catholic government is, and where they have, you know, all the employees, and where everything is happening. And there used to be a very powerful force in the town, and I felt that God is saying to me, they've lost all their power. There's nothing left. And in a way, maybe it's a good thing, because once you get at this point, you have to, you know, can only go two ways. Number one is you can return to God and really seek him you know, with all of your heart, all of your mind, and all of your soul, and seek to find a way to reach out to the people with a true and genuine gospel and get them back into a true relationship, not with Mary, not with the saints, not with an institution, not with an organization, not on a social level, but with Jesus Christ. So that is the opportunity I think they have at the moment, because there's nothing to lose. Or they can just choose any of the other ways, you know, to try to be a social club or whatever, and they're probably going to lose out on that. So the same thing when I look with evangelical churches is interesting as well. I did some study in my hometown. They've grown a little bit, and there are certainly more Christians in my hometown than when I came to know Christ. My hometown, about 100,000 people. And when I became a Christian, there were maybe just about 100 people in all of the town who were native to Paderborn, who were Christians. And then there was another Baptist church, which consisted of a lot of former Baptists from Russia who came over to Germany, resettled, and you know, started a new life there. They had pretty much their own church, which you know, was very cultural, was very much oriented towards their lifestyle, which was a lot of, you know, stuff they picked up in Russia, and they came over with that. But anyway, they were about 2,000 strong, since they were, as far as Bible believing churches go, the strongest force in town. And then there were just like a few small churches here and there who were Bible believing, and they weren't very strong. Now I think it's a little bit bigger. There are maybe 400 or 500, maybe 1,000 Christians in town. I don't know. Yeah, but we are not looking at massive numbers. So if we hit about the 1 percentage point of people who are Bible believing Christians, it's a good number. And then within the Catholic or within the other churches, I'm sure there are Christians who know the Lord as well. But we will see. Okay, what is the conclusion of it all? A lot of change has gone through. We have lost in a great way. Society has changed radically. We have been a victim, I think, in our society of postmodernism, where anything goes, anything is okay. Morality has gone out of the window. Good is bad, and bad is good these days. You know, people have abandoned. They've become apostate to cultural Christianity. They have abandoned Christianity. They don't want to know about God anymore. And that is a big problem as well, because even though I went to a church where probably the majority of people weren't born again Christian, they didn't know Jesus, but I'd heard the Bible. I was introduced to the Bible. I was introduced to the stories of the Bible. And by the time I became a Christian, I didn't knew the Bible very well, but I knew the Bible. I knew the stories in the Bible, and there was a foundation to build on, which a lot of people nowadays don't have anymore. They've got nothing. We've got church attendance, which is ridiculously down. I talked about mental health, it's gone down. We have got broken families, you know, we mentioned that. And one of the big issues we have is we are now dealing with a broken society. The Roman Empire went down because the family, it was eaten up from inside. The family structure broke down. Nobody paid any attention, and that is what we are having today, where we're just dealing with broken families, with men who are no longer men anymore, women who are no longer women anymore, people who are no longer facing up to their responsibilities. We've got a society of entitlement. We've got the sense of duty is no longer there. We are in deep trouble. We're going to carry on with this talk. We're running out of time now, but I just want to make this point. We are in deep trouble. And we know that Jesus is coming back soon, but still, we need to deal with all this stuff. Okay, God bless. This is the Christian War Room, and hear you again here on BPN Radio.
For the past half hour, you've been listening to the Christian War Room with host Michael Sean Bourne. For more information on how you can participate or find out more about the Christian War Room, simply go to ChristianWarRoom.com. That's ChristianWarRoom.com.